Hey, Shoujo fans, and welcome to episode 19 of Shoujo Sunday. This week, we are going to be reviewing the Studio Ghibli film Whisper of the Heart. Let's dig in. Shoujo fans, right off the bat, it is editing Gianna here. Just wanted to say that while we were recording this, I was getting over a cold, so my voice doesn't sound like it should normally, which ironically, recording this now, I'm also getting over some weird cough thing that made me lose my voice, so it sounds weird in the intro too here, so very sorry about that. But on a much lighter note, before we get started, here's a little highlight from our friends over at BLHQ. Be sure to check them out.
Hey, Stella. Do you like aggressive tops or power bottoms?
I like power bottoms. Like when a mafia lord and his innocent, like normal guy who's like, you know, super virginal. kind of like under the green light. That one's a really good one about a power bottom. What about you, Jenny?
Well, I really like the tops that are villains that are like only kind to one person and will like viciously kill everyone for their lover. Sort of like Luo Bingha from Scum Villain or Hua Cheng from Heaven's Official Blessing.
Yeah. Like the yandere types.
So good.
What about you, listener? Tell us your answer over on our podcast, BLHQ, where we talk about all things boys love and danmei.
On this season, we deep dive into Heaven's Official Blessing and also talk about queer manhwa, fanfics, anime, and more.
So you can find us on your favorite podcast app, or you can find us over on BLHQpodcast.com.
See you there.
Okay, guys, hello. So this week we're reviewing Whisper of the Heart, which is a Studio Ghibli film directed by Yoshifumi Kondo, released in 1995. And here is our soft serve summary brought to you by IMDb, because I personally was not going to write out all the details of this film while I watched it. So props to IMDb for this very thorough summary. Shizuku Tsukishima is a junior high school student living in a cramped apartment with her father, mother, and sister. As she returns from an errand to the store, her father, who is a librarian, mentions how they're converting their checkout system so that the checkout cards at the front of the books now will become obsolete. Pondering this, Shizuku goes to read a book that she checked out and is drawn to the name Seiji Amasawa on the card. Checking her other library books, she's amazed to see that his name also appears on those cards as well. The next day, Shizuku gets one of her teachers to allow her to check a book out from the school library, since the local public library didn't have a copy. Looking over the book, she notices a dedication inside that mentions the name Amasawa. While she's pondering this, her friend Yuko appears, and the two go off to talk. Shizuku has been working on a translation of the American song Take Me Home, Country Roads. While Yuko likes it, Shizuku still feels that it's trite. She also reveals a parody she wrote, titled Concrete Roads, the lyrics of which amuse them both. After a little bit, Yuko becomes serious and secretly reveals that she got a love letter, but her feelings are torn, as she actually likes a mutual friend of hers and Shizuku's, a boy named Sugimura. Shizuku then accompanies Yuko to her cram school lessons because important high school entrance exams are a short time away, but then realizes that she left the book she checked out back at school. Going back to where she was sitting, she finds a boy there reading it. He mentions her name, which he found on the checkout card, and makes a mention that concrete roads need some work. This infuriates Shizuku, who stews over this critique of her writing all the way home, calling him a jerk over and over. Later that day, her older sister Shiho returns home from visiting relatives and begins critiquing Shizuku even more. The next day, Shizuku plans to go to the library where her father works. Her sister makes a lunch for her to deliver to him. Getting on the train, Shizuku is surprised to see a large cat on the train. Curiously, she follows it out and into the city. After some time, the cat leads her to a small shop in a quiet neighborhood. Entering the shop, she is greeted by its owner, an old man named Shiro Nishi. seeing her admiring a statue of a humanized cat in a white suit and top hat, dubbed the Baron, he shows her a grandfather clock he's been restoring. However, realizing how late it is, Shizuku runs off to the library, but she's overjoyed at that wonderful little shop. Upon reaching the library, she suddenly realizes she left her father's lunch at the store. However, the boy she met previously who critiqued her writing appears and gives it to her. He makes a little joke about the lunch being pretty big for her and leaves singing Concrete Roads. This just infuriates Shizuku even more with this mysterious boy. During a break period at school, talking with Yuko, Sugimura appears, and Shizuku, knowing of Yuko's crush, hints that those two should study together. Yuko grows upset and chastises her in private for trying to help. Still curious about the dedication in the book she checked out, Shizuku goes to the teacher's lounge, where someone informs her that a Mr. Amasawa donated it, and that he has a son who goes to the school in her year. Shizuku bolts from the room, feeling that somehow the boy she saw is Mr. Amasawa's son. While heading to lunch, she and Yuko pass by the boy again, who passes without a word. For some reason, this seems to upset Shizuku. At lunch, Yuko regales two of their classmates and a teacher with this news, and the girls tease Shizuku about her new potential love. Shizuku vehemently denies any feelings for the boy and holds back showing the latest work on her translation of Take Me Home, Country Roads, unless the girls apologize. Doing so, they read the new translation and admit to really liking the newly translated lyrics. On her way home from school, Shizuku stops by the little shop, only to find it closed. Later that night, she gets a call from Yuko, whom she meets at a nearby park. Yuko is in tears after she met with Sugimura, who was relaying a message from another boy about asking her out. The fact that it was Sugimura who made this request upsets her so much that she decides not to go to school the next day. The next day at school, Sugimura meets up with Shizuku and they discuss what happened. Sugimura is not sure what he did to make Yuko run off and cry. Shizuku chews him out for not understanding that Yuko has feelings for him. The surprise on Sugimura's face is soon reflected in Shizuku's when he reveals that he actually likes her. Shizuku rejects him, saying she just wants to be friends with him. Later on that evening, Shizuku sobs about how dense she is about love as well. Later on, she gets on the train and goes back to that little shop. Still closed, she notices the cat, who sits down next to her. She begins to talk to it to get her mind off things. As she does so, the boy she saw the other day appears and begins to have a conversation with her. He knows the cat and calls him Moon, because he's so chunky that he looks like the full moon. However, the cat has no actual owner, and he's heard other people have their own names for him. The boy then reveals that his grandfather owns that little shop, but he's away at the moment. However, he allows Shizuku to enter the shop from the rear entrance. Bringing her onto the main floor, Shizuku is surprised to see the grandfather clock is gone. The boy explains that his grandfather had just completed fixing it the day she forgot her lunch. Still upset over that joke, Shizuku is then surprised when the boy shows her the cat statue. He shows her how a cleaning accident to the statue resulted in the eyes sparkling brilliantly in the setting sun from the nearby window. Afterwards, the boy shows Shizuku a workshop in the basement, where violin making lessons are taught. He reveals that he wants to make this his profession, but admits that he still isn't that good at it. Overjoyed at such a creative venture, Shizuku asks if he can play the violin. When he affirms this, she begs for him to play for her. He agrees on the condition that she sing. He begins to play Take Me Home, Country Roads, and Shizuku begins to sing her translation. As she does, Grandpa Nishi and some of his friends come home and join in with their own instruments. At the end of the song, they are all introduced, and Shizuku finally finds out the name of the boy, Seiji Amasawa. The same Seiji that had been checking out the same books as her. Later that night, Seiji walks her partway home, and they discuss his plans to go to Cremona, Italy, where he wants to study violin making. Grandpa Nishi is all for it, but Seiji's father is against it. As Shizuku takes her leave, Seiji mentions that he actually did like her song parody, Concrete Roads. This leaves Shizuku in a good mood as she heads home. The next day, Shizuku sees that Yuko is back in school, but a rumor has circulated that someone saw Shizuku walking with a boy. Shortly afterward, Sugimura appears to chat with Yuko, telling her that he will tell his friend that she turned down his request. As Sugimura leaves, Yuko smiles in a relieved fashion. Seiji comes by the classroom asking to see Shizuku, and the room erupts into a raucous cheer that Shizuku finally has a boyfriend. Shizuku angrily storms off and takes Seiji to the roof where they can talk in private. Seiji informs her that his father will allow him to go to Italy, and the two have an intimate conversation where Shizuku reveals that she seems to be developing feelings for him. However, some of her classmates have been spying on them, and she chases them off. For the rest of the day, she is very quiet, deep in thought. Later that evening, she goes to Yuko's house to talk to her. Shizuku feels distraught for a number of reasons. One is that Seiji's going to Italy, and he'll be gone for several years, and she won't see him for quite some time. Another reason is that she feels Seiji is working towards accomplishing a goal, something that she doesn't have. Yuko points out that Shizuku does have talent, given how well she translated the song Take Me Home, Country Roads. Yuko's observation energizes Shizuku, who vows to write a story. Shizuku begins to write her story and consults with Seiji's grandfather, who applauds her determination. On one visit, he shows her a rock that had been chipped away, revealing some lapis lazuli inside. This helps to inspire Shizuku even more in her writing, as she uses the lapis lazuli and the statue of the cat Baron for inspiration. Sometime afterward, she meets up with Seiji again, who is going off to Italy. They say their goodbyes, and Shizuku continues to work hard on her story. However, her determination soon begins to get in the way of other things, such as her schoolwork. After her mother is called to school, and her sister sees the grades from a mock quiz, Shizuku's father sits down with her to talk. Shizuku reveals that she does care about her studies, but she also needs to do what she is doing to better herself. Her father shows sympathy and allows her to continue what she's doing. Finally, Shizuku finishes the story, titled Whisper of the Heart. She goes to Seiji's grandfather, requesting he read it and let her know how she did. Once he finishes it, she panics, admitting that it's not perfect. He admits while it wasn't perfect, she can still keep refining it. The wave of exhaustion and realizing that it's not perfect causes her to break down in tears as she admits that she feels so far behind Seiji in achieving something. Seiji's grandfather realizes how much she cares for his grandson and treats her to dinner to calm down. After dinner, Seiji's grandfather tells Shizuku that her story had some interesting points, notably that the Baron had a wife. In real life, the Cat Baron statue did have a partner. He had found the two statues while living in Europe, but the Baron's wife was being fixed at the time. It was then that Seiji's grandfather decided he would take the Baron statue and his girlfriend would join him later, bringing the Baron's wife. However, this was during the war, and he never saw her or the Baron's wife again. Before Shizuku leaves, she is given the chipped rock with the lapis lazuli center as a gift. Very early the next morning, Shizuku awakes to find Seiji waiting for her outside. She rushes down to see him and gets on his bicycle, and he pedals her towards a hidden place. When they arrive on a hillside, they are just in time to see the sun rise over the hills. It is then that Seiji reveals his true feelings and that he's willing to wait for Shizuku if she will wait for him. He, surprisingly, proposes to her. She agrees, and he embraces her, declaring his love for her. And that is the Studio Ghibli film Whisper of the Heart. Oh, my goodness.
Good job, Gianna.
Thank you. We made it through the summary. So, as far as themes go, Chika, do you have some theme ideas?
I said, believe in yourself and dreams can come true.
Oh, that's really cute. I like that.
Do you have a theme?
Yes. I put, love should be empowering, inspiring, and bring out the best in you.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I loved this movie.
It was so heartwarming.
It really was. It really, really was. Let's get into some sprinkles on top. Do you have any?
First, rest in peace, Olivia Newton-John.
Yes, yes.
Apparently, in the opening, when you like first hear the singing, they took that from one of her performances of Country Roads. So I thought it was apt, you know, that we say rest in peace as she has passed on this year.
Mm-hmm.
And we also see the song sort of interwoven throughout the entire movie, which I think it's a good song, right? I do. I just, when they were talking about it, I think I was just personally waiting for them to somehow go into the country.
Right.
Like the whole time, I'm like, oh, like when they mentioned Shizuku's aunt, I was like, oh, is she going to visit her aunt? And then that's where the story takes place. But I guess they just like the song.
Yeah, I'm not really sure the correlation of Country Roads.
But it's so hard.
it feels a little arbitrary as like something to translate. Maybe they just wanted to give her like a very American song to translate into Japanese, and like Country Roads West Virginia was like the top choice.
Right. Every time I said West Virginia, I was just like, West Virginia does not look like this, but no. I still like what they did with it. It was just a little confusing. I guess an actual sprinkle on top, though, is the geode.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a perfect symbol of how both Seiji and Shizuku were, in that, you know, it's a little rough on the outside, but on the inside, that's where the actual emeralds are, the gems are.
Yeah.
And you have to dig down deep, and then once you get the gems out, you have to polish it. And I thought that was just a really perfect analogy in the space of life that Seiji and Shizuku were at.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like that's also something that we as the viewers can take away for ourselves as well, that there's something great within all of us and we just have to etch past the surface to find it and let it shine.
Yeah, yeah.
I also loved that it was lapis lazuli in particular. There are, if you're into like crystals and stuff, guys who are listening, there are metaphysical properties of lapis lazuli, including mental clarity, increased intuition, wisdom, psychic protection, and truth. And I loved that that was the stone that was picked for this, just based off of Shizuku's personality and just the nature of her story and everything.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know as much about crystals and stuff. I feel like I know vague things. So like stuff a little bit about the amethyst, rose quartz, like the very basic stuff. But I did like seeing them include lapis lazuli. And I also thought it was very cute to see how dedicated Shizuku was and like learning all of these different things so she could write this story.
Yeah.
And adding that in, it just felt like this flair that was really nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, very funny sprinkle on top. You all know lo-fi girl, right? Lo-fi beats study headphones on girl.
Yeah.
The roots of that are from this movie, and I will post the side-by-side, but Lo-fi Girl originated from Whisper of the Heart, and I knew it immediately once I saw her at her desk. I'm like, this is Lo-fi Girl. We're watching Lo-fi Girl right now.
Oh my gosh, guys. We're getting into the history behind the images that we're so obsessed with. I love that.
Yes, yes, yes.
The last sprinkle on top I had is actually Moon, the cat.
Oh, kitty cat.
Yes. First of all, so cute. I love Moon's like stout tail.
Yeah, oh my God. I love him. I'm also sending you the Lo-fi Girl picture right now.
Okay.
It's in the chat.
Oh my gosh, so perfect. Oh my gosh, and Moon is in it. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know.
Oh my God.
I love it so much.
What if it's just Shizuku like in high school at this point? Like...
It probably is.
I would die. Oh,
she's still writing stories. Oh, I love it.
I love it. So cute. But yeah, I mean, speaking of Moon, since Moon is in the Lo-fi Girl image, I love his stout tail. I love that he makes like the perfect loaf when he like rests.
Me too.
It's so adorable. Although we'll get into it later. I don't think her just following this cat. That was a lot, but I like cats, so I was just like, okay, well, you know what? We're just gonna see how the story goes, and I love how throughout the story, you just see Moon kind of weave it all together a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, it's sort of from Shizuku's mind, but, like, when she's dealing with real life stuff, then you see Moon when she first actually starts talking to Seiji for real, when she needs comforting after, like, giving Grandpa Nishi the story, and then you see her, she's just in at the balcony and Moon is just right beside her, like cuddled up against her and stuff. I just love the way that Moon is interwoven in this story.
Yeah, he's like a main character. He helps bring them together in a way without having to say anything. I love him so much.
I love him too.
Do you want to jump into Floats Your Boat?
Yeah.
Awesome. I feel like the first thing for me was I had an, oh, I see where this is going moment when she sees his name on all the library cards. I was like, oh, I love this. And she's like, oh, I wonder what he's like. I just entirely up my whole alley.
Right. Like the thing is, it just reminded me of when I was growing up because I loved reading. I still like to read, but I was voraciously reading, especially reading books I had no business reading, like romance books, the whole nine. I mean, yeah, I would read like young adult stuff, but still. And I used to come up with like stories of the people that like on the library card, like of who took it out and stuff. I mean, after a certain point, it was all digital, so they didn't like stamp who it was in there and stuff. But this is like way back when they still sort of did that when I was growing up. I would just make up stories about these people. Like they have to have such fantastic lives and everything. And what secrets do they leave in it? So seeing her be like obsessed with his name and wondering like what he was like, I thought it was the cutest thing.
Yeah. And I feel like there's a lost like magic without library cards, with it being all digital now, because it kind of felt like the energy of that person was still in the book. Like you were sharing this thing with these people and you were connected to them and you could see their name in that way. But, you know, technology is good, but we are missing, I feel like, just a touch of like magic and connection without it.
Right. And it's like you could go into the library and I love the smell. Mm-hmm. Like it's like, it's older, but then it's comforting. And it just felt as if so many people had came before and was in this library. And like, now I'm in this library and stuff.
Uh-huh.
I sort of miss it. Yeah.
Yeah. Another very kind of quick floats your boat would be when we first really get to see the setting where Shizuku lives. She's running around in this cute little orange outfit. And we have this beautiful orchestral score underneath her. The composition, all of the music for the movie was composed by Yuji Nomi. And I have a few points about the music as we go through Floats Your Boat. I think he did a phenomenal job. I loved it so much.
Yes, I think he did an amazing job. He's responsible for like all the music in it.
Yeah.
Like, so when they had the cicadas, y'all, oh my gosh, I was like, ooh, I'm in another time.
Yes.
Now, usually, I will say this, cicadas get on my damn nerves. They're big as fuck. When they die, they're fucking everywhere. Like, the last time I remember seeing them for real was, like, when I was in college, which now is actually years ago, which is wild. Like, wow, we're getting old. But anyway, I didn't actually mind the sound as much because it just reminded me of when I was, like, growing up. And so I was like, oh my gosh, this feels like summer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's just for that certain section. I also agree that, like, the way that the music was woven into the movie was great as well.
Yeah, like we even have, after Shizuku is yelling about how angry she is that Seiji read Concrete Roads and critiqued it, she's stomping home and yelling jerk over and over again, and there's this hilarious remix of Concrete Roads playing underneath all of that. It's so funny.
It was funny to just see the way that she reacted to him initially.
Yeah.
Which
she was mad. She was big mad.
She was big, big mad. And I'm just like, girl, like, it's not that deep.
It's
but she
not.
Was mad. Like, she was holding that grudge. And I was just like, damn, okay.
Yeah, I guess in a way, we do have to consider that she's in junior high, too.
Yeah, in middle school. Child, that's definitely going to come up later on in this episode.
Oh, it sure will. It sure will.
But I just thought it was adorable. I just love the setting, the way that they set up the movie and stuff. And it did feel like an old-time version of Japan, like with the cars.
Uh-huh.
It felt like the 80s, if anything.
Oh, it did.
Yeah, it felt like it was like in the 80s. I wouldn't even say it's, I don't think it's nowhere near the 90s, given that we still have Grandpa Nishi in it. But it was nice just seeing like the cars and looking at how old they were. And it's just like, okay, I'm in this new time and place and it's city life. And I think something that I would love to talk about also is just Shizuku's bond with her friends. I love her friend group.
Me too. They're so comfortable with each other. Just that middle school girl energy that's so nostalgic. I really loved it.
Yeah, I just love how close that they were. And also, it just reminded me of when I was growing up as well. And like, being so close to the librarian and stuff. Like, they were having lunch with her.
Yeah.
It's just so adorable. I love her little friend group.
Yeah, it was also really sweet to see Yuko confiding in her about her crush. It was just so sweet.
She was excited to tell her. And then, of course, we directly see Shuji Mura, I guess, playing baseball and asking her to toss over his bag.
Mm-hmm.
It's cute because she's so embarrassed that she, like, runs off. And it's like, he's not going to notice that you like him.
Yeah, from, like, 30 feet away.
Yeah.
The innocence.
It's so cute because it's just, like, they think it's so obvious, but it's really not.
It's not. Especially, like, okay, boys are so dense, like,
for real.
She would need to, like, smack him over the head with it.
She would, actually. And she didn't end up doing that, but we did get to see Seiji and Shizuku meet up technically for the first time. I think it was the first time when he was reading the fairy tales book.
Yeah, it was an interesting introduction for sure.
Right. What's so cute to me is, like, now that we know, which, I mean, obviously we're reviewing this, spoiler alert, guys. but now that we know that he, like, went out of his way to go rent books so that she would see his name, which I, like, died, Gianna. I swear to God. I was like, oh my gosh, the love, like, love overload, the shoujo feels, like, wow.
Oh, the big shoujo feels, yeah.
That he went out of his way to do that. And so that meant that even when it came to her meeting him this time, he went out of his way to get her attention.
Yeah.
She got the book and everything. And, like, I wonder how he even got that one. Well, wait. Not me realizing stuff while we're recording.
Oh, no, what?
I think they donated his, I don't know if it's his dad or someone on his dad's side of the family that donated the book she was actually looking at. And so it actually did just happen to have his name in it. Like, did he plan that out too?
Oh my God, I wonder if he planned that. Like, he planted it in the school library. Oh my God.
Right? I am dying. Okay. It had the little stamp on it, and it was, I guess, his father or his paternal grandfather's, like, stamp. But it was a fairy tale book, and it's like, why would they donate that? You know, like,
yeah.
Oh my gosh. This is so cute, guys. I cannot. Anyway, so they meet and he, like, pokes fun at her. So I guess he's coming on that type of, what is it? The person that picks on you actually likes you. Don't really believe that. That normally doesn't happen. I feel like let's relegate that to, you know, the 80s or whenever this movie was set.
Yes, yes.
If somebody's bullying you, they're bullying you.
Yeah, full stop.
They do not like you. Don't think that they do. Like, oh, my gosh.
It is not cute.
That brought back bad memories for me. I thought that, like, that did not even happen during my time, guys. So I'm telling you. And I say that, like, when I was in elementary school, I thought that was what the thing was. Because somebody told me that shit and I believed it.
Right. Someone told me that too. Girls are just told that when we're kids and it's really fucked up.
It is, because it's like, no, like, that person does not like, that person is bullying you. Like,
yeah.
You should report them.
And stay away.
Stay far away. But either way, so only in the movies. So apparently he's taking on the approach of, like, slightly irritating her to get her to think about him. So she's, like, saying jerk, jerk, jerk till she gets to her house, which I have got to say, banana split her house. That.
Yeah, I have that, I think, in I Scream, You Scream, because I was literally screaming on the inside at the side of that house or apartment, I guess.
I was claustrophobic. I'm just like, how do y'all can never move out.
Yeah.
Like, don't ever move out, because the living nightmare that it is. I understand having a library, but it's like a library and then piles of books and, like, stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere. They're hoarders.
I know. Like, I'm the type of person that, like, if I have something that has not been put away for too long, it bothers the hell out of me until I finally put the thing away. So I really like a clean space. So I was definitely, like, I was, like, itchy during the scene.
Right. I feel like I get into, like, I do depression cleaning.
Okay.
So, like, if I'm really depressed, then things will pile up. And then one day I'll, like, snap out of it. And then I'm intensely cleaning, like, every single. So it will take a while for it to actually get back to, oh, I need to start picking up again and stuff. But when I saw that, I was just like, I don't know how you do it. Yeah. I couldn't do it. All of these adults. How?
Yeah. I know it can be hard to keep up with cleaning when you're busy, but you gotta set yourself aside, like, an hour a week. You'd be amazed what you can do in 1 hour.
Right. I was just wondering, because of the fact that their mom was getting, like, a master's thesis. This is how you know this is old, because I don't know, like, unless she's on some sort of loan, like, I don't know how you can have, like, a one income household off of a librarian.
Yeah.
Like, not now.
No. God, no.
Not now at all. Like, she would still be working. regardless of if she was at school full-time or part-time.
Yeah.
But I think it was just interesting to just see her overall family dynamic. I love her parents, though, despite the fact that they are hoarders.
Yeah.
I think they're such great parents.
Yeah, they're such warm people. They're so accepting. I just really liked that that was the influence Shizuku had in her life, to be able to be herself and express herself and find what she loves and explore her passions. It's just a great example for her.
Right. And like the thing about it is that it's kind of unrealistic. In a way. Now, hear me out. The reason why I would say it is unrealistic, because if this is taking place in Japan, of all places. Now, I'm not going to pigeonhole all parents into forcing their kids into cram school and stuff. I'm sure that there are parents that are a little bit more lax, but the studying culture over there is so intense that for me, I was like, I like the fact that her parents were open and it was nice to see that, but they don't do that over there. Like,
yeah, it was definitely something I felt deviated from the normal.
Right. Which, I mean, it's also good just because most of the time, like when we're watching anime, that's most definitely what the normal is, or like the lead character. If they're not dumb as rocks and then suddenly have like a superpower, then they're extremely smart and then they're like at the top of their class or something and then they're figuring something out. So I like that with this, Shizuku can just be in the middle, and then her parents are accepting of that, you know, and they don't like push her to do more than what she thinks she can do.
My cat's trying to get in the tote bags. Speaking of cats, Train Kitty, before we knew his name was Moon, I was immediately so taken by Train Kitty, and I would have absolutely made small talk with the cat on the train just like Shizuku. He was like just so chunky sitting on the train, and oh my gosh.
Right.
I know that you have feelings about the chase, but I feel like low-key I would do the same exact thing. And it was also this very Alice in Wonderland-esque chase of the cat around town. I thought it was fun.
I think it's just a different world, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, yeah, this is like an anime and stuff. But I think even if she was caring for the cat, I think to follow the cat for that long,
it was kind of exceptionally long.
It was a really long time, guys. I was just kind of like, I don't know, y'all could have really sped this up. Like, I mean, it's nice to see the landscape, but then at the same time, it's just like, why do you keep following this cat, girl? You have your daddy's lunch.
Yeah, like, don't you have somewhere to be?
Can't you just, I don't know, take your dad his lunch and then go back to seeing if you can find the cat again? Because I was just worried, like, not really worried, but just thinking like, oh, what if he's expecting the lunch?
No, I was thinking that too. Like, does he have a set lunch hour that he has to take? Like, and what if she doesn't bring it to him in time to eat? Like, as an adult, like, that's what I'm thinking. Like, break time's so important and it is so hard to come by that, like, he needs his lunch, goddammit.
Yeah, like, when you're taking breaks and stuff, you gotta turn off your mind.
Yeah.
And, like, think about whatever else. And, you know, if you're hungry and everybody else is eating around you, it sucks so bad. But
yeah,
regardless, I like that at least eventually she kept following this cat, and then she just runs up into this shop. Now, I've also thought that was like another thing that was slightly unrealistic, just because it is a shop, the door is open, somebody has got to be there, girl. Like, you could just be like, oh, hey,
yeah, excuse me, like,
I'm here.
yeah,
which, I mean, I'm glad that Grandpa Nishi, she's like the type of person that he is, because
I love him. I love him so much.
I love him too.
He just encourages her to take her time and look around, and he's like showing her the clock so enthusiastically.
Yeah, I did not read the synopsis at all. I just started watching the movie.
Oh, same.
So I thought that somehow the Baron, the cat statue Baron, was gonna come to life.
So did I.
And that she was going to go somehow into that clock. And then it was going to be her trying to help whoever the king was meet up with the fairy woman to see how they could break her curse of being a sheep.
Wait, but that's a beautiful fan fiction. I love this.
Right. So I'm just thinking, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm ready for this to happen. You know, it's finna happen. It's finna happen. And it didn't. So I was like, where are we going?
It was like, just a slice of life shoujo. No fantasy elements. I mean, maybe a little fantasy elements, but nothing like that.
A little fantasy, but I was waiting. I'm just like, okay, like, she's gonna switch up. She's gonna do something. She's gonna knock into the thing a little bit. I don't know. Go into this world. And when she comes back to herself, she's with Grandpa Nishi. But no, that did not happen, y'all. So,
I love that, though. Like, I want to read that or watch that.
You know what? To be honest, I feel like Ghibli really could have done
it. For sure.
Now, we haven't seen Cat Returns in like 80 years, guys. I feel like eventually we're going to watch it and review it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what they do in that movie. I don't remember.
Right? Maybe that is. Maybe it is. That would be great.
I would be happy because it's just like you're telling this story and like I'm invested and like the king of the dwarves. So is he a dwarf? Are they just like, what is this? Like,
so many questions.
So many questions. So little time. But I love the story, and when it comes to his actual antique shop, one thing that I love about Grandpa Nishi is I feel like he doesn't even collect items, he collects the stories that come with the item.
Yeah, oh, there's such magic in that. I love that so much.
Yeah, and I was a little sad to see that the clock ends up going back to wherever it was.
Yeah.
But, you know, for him to take the time and, like, repair it and make it as good as new and to have this beautiful story to tell about it, I thought it was amazing. And Grandpa Nishi in general just has great stories.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. And side note, I want the clock. I wanted the clock. I think it's a beautiful, like, tragic fairy tale clock, and I would absolutely adore it.
Right? Right? Ghibli be selling everything. They can sell the clock.
Right. Oh, I should, like, Google to see if, like, someone on Etsy made it or something.
They might. And you know what? Something else that I noted, I'm glad I wrote it down in my notes, or I would have forgot. If you're looking, when you tell Shizuku to, like, look at the clock striking 12, and you see the clock face, God. Guys, they have the inscription Porco Rosso in it. The Ghibli film.
Oh my gosh. Why is that not ringing a bell?
The movie or just the inscription?
The inscription.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, it was in it. It's like you see the clock hands and then it's right under sort of the base part of the clock hands that you see Porco Rosso. But you don't see the full P, but I knew what it was when I saw it.
I love when little Easter eggs are just inserted into stuff.
Right. But yeah, I thought that was, I love the antique shop. And then, of course, our favorite scatterbrain was like, oh, I gotta take my dad his lunch. Bye.
Bye.
Without the lunch.
Yeah. Head in the clouds, girl.
I was just like, your daddy's gonna yell at you, girl. You ran all that way. You can't even go back to go get it because it's already his lunchtime will be gone.
Oh, poor dad.
Right. And then we see Shaji again.
Yes.
And I was just like, okay, male lead. All right.
You're always around.
Always around. And Moon is just comfortable. Like, I don't know how Moon could be comfortable being on the back of that bike and they have to go down this mountain hill thing.
Yeah, that's why I think that there's like something special about him.
Yeah.
Like there's something like fantastical about him. Also, as Gianna Luna say, I am so pleased that this cat's name is Moon. I'm so happy.
Right, Moon. And what was the other name they called it? Makuta?
Muta.
Muta. Let me look that up. Muta meaning. What does it mean? Change?
Change? Really? Huh.
I don't know. It's like, no, that's Merriam and Webster. Oh, what? Not Urban Dictionary. I don't need that meaning.
No, no.
Muta in Japanese. Okay. It's bestow, participate in, give, award, impart, provide, cause, gift, godsend. Interesting. I guess he is technically doing all of the things. I wonder which meaning it is, though. There's like so many meanings. Maybe it depends on how it's written.
Yeah, maybe.
But either way, I do think Muta is a godsend. I prefer Moon, though, as a name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very adorable.
Mm-hmm. So there's a scene. We were already talking about the dynamic between Shizuku and her group of friends. And there's a scene where she presents them with the latest translation of Country Roads. And they're like reading the lyrics and kind of singing them. And she's just kind of sitting back and blushing and trying to like take it all in. And I felt like as an artist, I feel like it was a very great way to capture showing someone your songs or your work. It's definitely a stand there and blush and hope they like it kind of feeling.
It is. It's so adorable. I think it just shows how close she is with her friend group, because I would say if you're writing lyrics to something or you're translating or doing something in and of those lines, to then go and share that with your friends, it's like as if you're showing yourself.
Yes, yes.
Like an inner part of yourself. And so she's just doing that. And I love that she felt safe enough to do that.
Yeah, there's a special comfort and someone that you'll show a new project to, or especially a work in progress to. It's so nice that she has that with her group of friends.
Yeah.
Also, to make another quick comment on the music, when Shizuku is feeling more somber and she's taking the train and walking through town after Sugimura confesses to her, we have this really nice, somber, the only way I can describe it is like Dire Dire Docks from Super Mario 64 mixed with aquatic ambience from Donkey Kong Country. It was like this beautiful, synthy, chill, somber goodness, and I just really liked taking that in. I feel like it accompanied the emotion in the scene so well.
Yeah, the first iteration of our lofi girl.
Yes, yes.
Having this music.
1000%.
Yeah, after she has to reject her friend, which I thought that was like, oh my gosh, the preteen drama of it all.
Oh my god.
Yuko likes Tsuchimura, who likes Shizuko, and Shizuko's just like,
nah, I want library card, boy.
Girl code, like.
Also, yes.
First of all, she broke you.
Yo, I was so surprised. I was so surprised when she was like, you're like so dense. She has feelings for you. I'm like, you're gonna do that? You're gonna do that to Yuko after she literally skipped school because she like yelled at him vaguely?
Right? I'm just like, girl, that is a lot of trust you're putting in him. Thankfully, he's a good enough person that he didn't out her. Oh my god. But who? She broke girl code and then she kept to it. And I was just like, I guess, girl, banana split on that.
For sure.
If my best friend told me she likes somebody and then that person told me that they liked me, first off, I would keep that to myself. Well, maybe. I don't know. Actually, would I keep that to myself? No, I think I would have told Yuko.
That, wait, in this hypothetical situation that the friend told
hypothetical.
You. Hypothetical. Yeah, the friend told you that they liked them, you would tell your other friend that has the crush on them. Wow, this is so hard to explain.
Right. Okay, guys, okay. Let me try to analogize this a little bit or use real life examples. So let's say Gianna liked some guy named Mark.
That's my best friend's name.
Oh, wait, shit. Replace it.
I can't wait till he gets to this episode. He's gonna be like, you got something to tell me?
Okay, let's say Gianna likes this man named Raphael, okay?
Okay, and, safe name.
Right, Raphael. And then Raphael tells me that he likes me. I would be like, no, because I don't like you. I wouldn't actually snitch on you, but whatever, we're going with this movie. So let's hypothetically say that I told him. It's like, no, Gianna likes you, Raphael. I don't like you like that. You're just my friend. So we'll just be friends. I would totally tell Gianna that Raphael told me that he liked me. And the reason why I would do that, because y'all might think, oh, that's hurtful. But the reason why I would do that is because, and I guess that's also going from my own personal experience, it's a really nasty feeling to like someone and then find out that they actually liked your friend first.
Yeah. And it's also the honest thing to do. Like, I would so much rather somebody tell me something as important as that right away.
Yeah.
Than keep it from me to, like, protect me. Because in the end, I'm not going to feel protected. I'm going to feel betrayed that you weren't honest with me.
Right. And it's just a weird place to like be in, because if you tell them that, and in doing that, I would have said, oh, I rejected Raphael or whatever. But in doing that, it's like giving Gianna the chance to get over her feelings for Raphael.
Yeah.
And like somebody else.
Yeah. Healing can begin immediately instead of like in a week or two or however long it takes for that news to finally come out.
Right. And then and if that happened, you would never really like know, like, did this person like me for me, or did they like me because my friend didn't like them and so they settled with me?
Yeah. And then you're constantly comparing yourself and insecurities. It's just not good. It's not a good situation.
It's a nasty piece of work. And let me tell you, like I said, personal experience as the person that dated somebody that actually had liked a former friend first, it fucks with your head bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so actually that technically would be like, it's like banana split, ice cream, you scream, because it's like I'm not fully.
Yeah, I had the love triangle in banana split, but you definitely had more to say about it. I'm pretty sure I just wrote, oh no, a love triangle.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think it's just because of like, because I've been through it. So it's just like, I get it being banana split, but then also at the same time, ice cream, you scream, because Yuko deserves better.
Oh, she does. She's so sweet.
So sweet. But yeah, so then that happens. And then I think something that we get to see throughout the movie is that Shizuku is a little, I guess she doesn't really like change as much, right? At least not at first. And so after Tsujimura confesses to her and she goes home, this girl is boohoo crying to the point where I was just like, did you like him? Like, shit. Maybe it was just like, at least maybe the way that I took it, I thought that she was crying because she knew that by rejecting him, it might change their friendship.
Yeah.
Or the way that it was.
I think she just kind of felt bad for everybody involved, and it kind of felt like she was putting the burden on herself for not realizing that he had feelings for her so that she could like fix it somehow, even though it's not her responsibility to fix it. So I think she was just feeling like stupid, and as she called herself, dense and like overwhelmed, and probably felt so bad for Yuko as well.
Yeah. Yeah, because she knew just how much Yuko liked Tsujimura. But she gets super emotional and she cries, and then she ends up going back to the antique shop.
Yes.
And then Moon is there.
Yeah, I loved how she was just expressing herself and getting things off of her mind to this kitty cat.
Yeah, and like something that I just thought about is I feel like there has to be something deeper about her not believing in herself, because even before she finds out all the stuff that Seiji does, she was talking down about herself. It was just like, oh, that she writes stupid lyrics and that she's not great and da 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 da.
Yeah, I wonder, which I'll get to this in Ice Cream, You Scream. I'm not going to expand on this at all right now, but I wonder if like the way her sister talks to her has anything to do with it.
Maybe. Because I mean, I don't know, because it feels as if there's always going to be like chores around. And she does seem a little scatterbrained, but her family is also scattered. Her mom is, definitely. So she needs to be reminded to do certain things. And I think out of everybody in the family, like her sister Masako, I think.
Oh, I thought it was Shiho.
Is it Shiho?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Maybe that was different in, because I know you had to watch the English because you watched it on HBO, but I rented it on YouTube and I watched it in Japanese. So it was Shiho in the Japanese version.
Oh my gosh. You're right. Wow, I'm going to hell. Okay, no. So Shiho, I think that she's like the very responsible on top of it person. And so
yeah,
all of the things her parents don't have, she like makes up for. So she's cleaning, she's cooking, she's putting things away in the hoarder house. Like, and so maybe she just took it upon herself since she knew her parents weren't like encouraging her to do certain things or reminding Shizuku to do certain things that, oh, well, I'll do it. But I still feel like even when there was that tough love moment about her grades and stuff in school, like, at least the way that I took it, Shiho meant well. I mean, Shizuku just didn't like the delivery, but if they were being a little bit more realistic, then her parents would be harder on her about her grades. And I think she also mentioned that when she was talking to Yuko about how she wished that her parents did more or said more to her about her grades.
Yeah, I think Yuko says something like, you're lucky your parents don't get on you about studying like mine do or something.
Yeah. And then she was like, oh, I wish they did. So I don't know if she just needed that type of authority from her parents and not from her sister. But either way, it was kind of sad to just see her, even before she learns about Seiji, like, being this violin maker, which, first of all, how? But...
Oh, right.
Right? It's just like, what?
Yeah. I love that Seiji makes violins. And it's, like, such a cool, unique thing. But I'm like, is that a junior high school hobby?
Right.
Like, it's so interesting. Is that something you do in junior high, though?
You don't.
I don't know.
You don't.
Yeah, I guess it's banana split. Yeah.
Banana split, because the most that they would have you be doing is, like, home economics or maybe vocational training. But hands-on making a violin... How do you even get started with that? Like, it would make sense if Grandpa Nishi was a violin maker and he just learned at his feet. Then that would make more sense to me. But because of the fact that Grandpa Nishi's like a fixer-upper antique person, I wonder how he even got into that.
I kind of wondered, because it seems like Grandpa Nishi is also musically inclined, and it was never clear who was teaching the violin making classes in the workshop, and it is Grandpa Nishi's store. I didn't know if maybe he was teaching the classes and maybe Seiji learned from him, but I feel like that's a lot for me to infer on the minimal information we have.
Right, right. Same. That's how I feel too. Like, I don't know necessarily how to feel about it, but in any case, we're gonna suspend our disbelief. So he
yes,
he's making the violin. He shows her the baron.
Yeah.
So she's just staring at the baron for hours, or at least long enough for the sun to go down, which at that point I thought, oh, we're gonna go into fantasy, whatever, he's gonna come alive,
right, he's gonna transform, it's gonna be a whole thing. I thought so too.
I was waiting for it, y'all.
Me too. I love that we were both waiting for it.
It's not the clock. Okay, maybe it's just the baron. Maybe that's what it is or whatever. But no, it didn't happen. Then she goes back down and then they start singing Country Roads again. And it's just like...
Oh, I loved when she was like, oh, like, do you play the violin? Play for me. Oh, please. And he's like, well, only if you sing. She's like, I'm tone deaf. And he says... Perfect. I thought that was so cute. But especially when she's just like blushing at him and her jaws dropped while he's playing the violin. I'm like, this is me every time I watch someone I'm attracted to play music or just execute their hobby well.
Right? When you like somebody and then you see them doing whatever it is that they're passionate about, it's such a turn on.
Oh, it is.
It gives you like the feels. Like, it sort of reminds me of seeing a friend either doing something that they're passionate about, talking about something they're passionate about, and it's like you're just happy to be there and happy to support them.
Yeah.
And so it was nice, and he was like, oh, you're gonna know this song, and I'm just like, how is she gonna know this song? But of course she knows Country Roads because they've been pushing that song the whole movie. So he starts playing it.
Wait, do you think that he went home and learned Country Roads after he saw her notes in the book that day?
The thing is, I don't know. I feel like it's yes and no.
I'm gonna believe that because I love that.
Like, it's yes and no. Because yes, because why not? But then no, since Grandpa Nishi and his friends all just picked up the stuff and started playing it.
Oh, yeah. To be fair, that's a very easy song to play by ear.
Okay, but, true.
Yeah.
Gianna would know. I would know. But either way, like, she starts singing and then Grandpa Nishi and friends, they come downstairs and then they start playing. And then the thing is, I was so proud of her that she kept singing, because I would have stopped. I would be like, oh, well.
Yeah, not with the audience.
Not with the audience. I didn't sign up for that. But, you know, she kept singing and, like, they joined in. It was such a fun time.
Yeah, it really was.
And then she just ruined it because she was mad about his name.
I know. It took, like, a sharp left.
Right, because it's like, girl, like, you were just singing with him.
Like, relax.
Like, right. And now you're mad that his name is his name?
Well, she was like, he doesn't match up to the idea I made of him in my head, but she seemed to get over it very quickly.
Very quickly, because this man makes violins. Like, I mean, child.
I mean, like, I would get over it quickly too, damn.
And he looked better than the other boys that were in that school, so I was just like, okay,
yeah,
get over it, girl. Like, and I'm glad that he got over it as well, because, you know, I would have been a little offended, because, like, why are you mad?
Exactly. It's like, what's wrong with me?
Right. What's wrong with my name? Like, my grandpa is still my grandpa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He walks her partway home, and there is this gorgeous music box-driven song that plays underneath this scene, and he's telling her how he wants to make violins for a living, and they talk about life while this soft but stirring music plays in the background. It's like the stars shine above, and it looks like a beautiful, warm summer night, and I felt like this was the perfect backdrop as their story together kind of truly begins at this point, and he's like complimenting her poetry. It was so sweet. I really, really liked that moment.
I just love, like, I didn't know, realize how certain shoujo things that, like, we didn't really get. I mean, we get shoujo and Kageki shoujo, but, like, the romance aspect was gone. Oh, so I didn't realize, like, how much I needed it until we were
watching. My God, right? Oh, it just hit all the best feels.
All of the best feels. I was so happy watching this movie, and I had to watch it dubbed. Now, I don't normally do that, but I didn't mind the dub either. But regardless, I thought it was a really just heartwarming scene. And then he's just talking about going to Italy. That was another moment of, I need to suspend my belief, banana split.
Yes, yes. For sure.
Because ain't no way.
Yeah, we'll get there.
I don't care. Ain't no way. I don't care if you're making violence or whatever. Da, 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 da. You are not going to leave 2 months of school so that you can go and apprentice in Italy. First of all, I'm just like, y'all just have money like that.
Right, right.
I was thinking about all the logistics. I'm like, do you know Italian?
Right, that's a whole other can of worms.
Do you know Italian? Where are you going to stay? Is wherever you're staying, do you have to pay money so your parents have to pay for that money? What about food? You know, like, yes, you have the apprentice person, but that doesn't mean that that person offers room and board.
Yeah.
There were so many, like, different things, and I was just like, I gotta suspend my belief again. Because I was fully ready for his parents to be like, that's a pipe dream, give up, you need to finish, at least finish school. Like, this seemed like a conversation that you would see in anime when they're finishing high school.
Yeah.
Then middle school. And even in high school, it would still be the same questions. It would still be like, what? But still, for them to be in middle school, and like, I remember when I graduated from middle school and I got into high school the first time, and I was just so young. It was like being a baby. You're learning more about the world, and then everybody around you is still technically in that adolescence, but some are more closer to being an adult, while others are like more childlike, I guess, or they're not as tainted, like maybe they're more innocent. And so to be in that specific time field, and it's just like, I'm gonna go to Italy, like, what?
But okay. Yeah. There was a scene where Shizuku was awake and her sister kind of reminds her to turn off the light. And there was a great little touch with the sound design here for the transition from turning off the buzzing desk lamp to the next morning, the pitter-patter of heavy rain on the streets and the umbrellas as Shizuku's rushing to school. I just really liked the little sound design on that.
Yeah, I like that too. And you know something? At that moment, I wish that her sister, I wish that Chiyo took her more seriously when she asked about how did she decide, like, what she wanted to do, you know? And, like, I know that they do technically determine that by school, and as we learned from Kageki Shoujo, you know, like, you'll get into a school, but it's like you have to be the top percent to get into it.
Yeah.
And you have to dedicate your entire life if you want to do some sort of skill, and certain schools are better for whatever it is that you want to do. So I understood Shizuku questioning what it was that she wanted to do, because, I mean, with situations like that, like, what if she's at the wrong school? We learned that she loves writing, like, a little bit, but what if she got into a school that was more about math rather than about writing
or
creative arts?
And that thing is just, like, so tricky in real life. You have to know, like, what you want so early. Like, you've only been on the earth for, like, 15, 16 years, and people want you to figure out what you're gonna do forever at that point. Like, I didn't know that I have a love and a passion for baking, and if I knew that in high school, maybe I would have gone to pastry school, because, I mean, I guess spoiler alert, folks, I didn't finish college because And I was an honor student like my whole life. I ended up realizing it wasn't for me. And I felt a lot of failure in that. And I didn't know what to do. And I felt kind of directionless, even though I knew like the passion of my life was music. It's just like, there's so much pressure on young people to know everything, but we're also being told over and over again how we know nothing at that time in our life.
Yeah.
So I feel for Shizuku and like everyone in life, all humans everywhere going through that.
Yeah, like I was so certain for years. I was saying, I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm going to be a lawyer. And I'm going to be a writer. And oh my gosh, I think it's called, what is this book series called? I think it's called the Pink Carnation series by Laura Willig. So the Pink Carnation series, it was like a romance. It's a romance series set in like Victorian times or whatever. And the author is a romance author, but she's also a lawyer. Like she went to law school and everything. And so I was just like, I'm going to be like her. But my issue was that anytime I thought about books, it's like they would play out like movies in my head. So by the time I got down to like writing things, it's like, oh, mentally I'm at the climax and I need to be doing exposition of like the first chapter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that kept happening over and over. And I was like, maybe I should just give up and just do the law school thing. But the thing was, like, that actually didn't pan out. Like, I did the LSAT, which that was a pain in the fucking ass. I did the LSAT. I got into a school, but it wasn't my number one school. I was rejected from my number one school. And, like, when you end up doing school after college, it's an even larger dedication of money.
Yeah.
And it's just like, do I want to bet on myself? Like, let's say I went to the school that wasn't my number one school and then transferred. Like, would that be okay? Like, they would probably like look down on me because it's not like it was the best school or whatever. It wasn't higher up like that. And then I thought, okay, well, maybe I'll try to get into Peace Corps. That didn't pan out either. I wasn't able to get to the places I wanted. I think they wanted to just Peace Corps, who knows how it is now. A lot of the people that were doing Peace Corps got sent to like Africa, and I wanted to go to a place where, you know, I mean, I didn't want to go to Africa. I mean, I'm already from Nigeria. I've been in Nigeria and stuff before, but I didn't want to like go to a different country because sometimes that can be a little weird. Let's not get into like, I guess, interracial dynamics, but still. So I wanted to go to like Costa Rica, I think it was like my number one thing, and then somewhere in Asia, and then that didn't pan out. So at that point, I'm just like, okay, well, then I'll do graduate school, which I low-key regret because debt. But
yeah.
The thing is, I mean, I finished it, but like I said, I finished it in debt and that sucks. But even when you think you have like a very specific dream, like things end up changing. And now I do communications work and I work as a social media manager. And I actually remember a time where I thought about majoring in it or like double majoring in it. And my family was against that because they didn't want me to take a longer time, like to be in school for like 5 years. And so I didn't do that, but I kind of wish that I did, seeing that that's what I do now and what I like to do, you know? And so you just never really know. So I feel for Shizuku that, you know, she's just trying to figure out what she wants to do in a place where everybody just expects you to just know.
Yeah. And something so beautiful that happens from this is that Seiji inspires Shizuku to find out how talented she is at writing and really give it a shot.
Yeah.
I feel like this is what love does and should do. The person you love should inspire you to be better. You should inspire each other to keep going and continue improving. She says, if he can do it, so can I, and I feel empowered. And this is so beautiful.
Yeah, I like that she was empowered to get started. And like, once she started writing, guys, that's when we finally got into our fantasy.
Yes, we see the Baron.
It just took us an hour to get to it. But
yeah.
She starts writing because, first off, Seiji low-key pulls her out. He's just like, oh, can you come out? Let's go to the rooftop. They're at the rooftop. And he tells her, she's the first one to know that he's able to go to Italy. God knows how. But he's able to go to Italy just like he wanted. And he's about to leave. And he he's going to come back for graduation. God knows how. But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love that he wanted her to know, and that's why he called her out.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, guys, I was getting all of like the blood vessels within me that was like obsessed with romance. All of them were just moving at a fast pace. I was like, this is what I need. Like, this love.
Yes.
Okay. And then he's getting ready to confess, and I'm just like, okay, this is the moment. This is it. We're finna get it, right? He tells her about the books. Woo, guys. Ooh, it's like a firework just went off. Like, just imagine a firework and it's me. And I'm like, yes! Oh my gosh, this is so contrived. This is so deep. Levels, levels, levels. And then her nosy ass classmates just fuck it up. I was so mad.
Oh my God, I know. Yeah. I'll say more about them later.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And then she starts crying because he's gonna be gone.
Yeah, like it settles into her at that moment. It was written so beautifully that it really sinks into her the second she walks away and is shooing them off that, like, shit, like he's gonna leave. He's gonna be gone and I'm gonna have to face that.
Yeah, she's gonna have to face it. And it's like she just realized that she did actually like him.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that she was able to go see Yuko.
Yeah.
So she could kind of console her. And we see Yuko's house and she's just emotional about the fact that he's gonna just be gone. And then on top of it, then that's all of those negative feelings that she had for herself started coming out in that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yuko was doing her best. I applaud Yuko for just being like, no, like you are really talented.
Yeah.
And we love your lyrics, you know? And she was just trying to, like, encourage her. Like, don't give up. Like, this is a great love story.
Yeah. It's just nice seeing Shizuku have somebody so solid in her corner.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that she has that sort of friendship.
Yeah, absolutely. So there is a bit that I personally just really appreciated where Shizuku is writing her story in class and she is entirely transported away into her own universe. But she's called back to reality by like a classmate calling her name, and they have to call her name a few times before she starts to come to. She has to fade out of her world, and then they show her fading into black and then into reality. And I think that this is a superb depiction of being pulled back from reality when you get really sucked into writing or doing anything creative or even just like a vivid daydream. It was just so beautifully executed.
Something else that I like, it came a little bit before this, is just the fact that she even asked Grandpa Nishi for permission to write about the Baron.
That's actually in my rocky road. Like, I don't know what, I just started.
Okay.
I cried.
Okay. I love that she did that. And then we actually, like, so when we're getting into this world the first time, and like she's doing it as she's going home, or she's getting into like this fantasy as she's going home, we get to see the Baron.
Yes.
And he's just this absolute gentleman. Now, since I was watching the dub version, it was Carrie Ells. Guys, okay. I used to have a thing for Carrie Ells. A big thing, because Princess Bride, I was just like, listen, if I was grown. If I was grown, I'd go after this like grown ass man. But oh my gosh, so him as the Baron, I was just like, oh, this is just perfect.
Yeah.
And so seeing him encourage her to start flying with the air currents, and she's just making this stuff up, and I'm just like, yeah. And I'm thinking, oh, we're finna stay up in here, right? We're gonna stay in this world till she's done.
Nope.
But no, she doesn't. She like knocks out of it, and then she goes back in, and then we realize that she's writing at school.
But I thought that was such a great peek into her universe she was creating. It was so vivid.
Yeah, and it's like, I would be focused on that too. Oh my gosh, I'm so remiss. Wait, when she started writing, was he still there, right? I know he said goodbye to her, Seiji.
I think she started writing shortly before he left.
Okay.
But then she challenged herself to finish the book, essentially.
By the time he came back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, I guess this isn't technically a positive thing, but I just really, really liked the way that it was written. and animated and everything. They made Shizuku's stress and all of her scattered emotions so palpable after Seiji leaves. She's trying to juggle writing her story, her newfound love, missing him, counting down the days, school, and her family life all at once. And I felt like I could feel that. Like, I was starting to feel how stressed she was watching it.
Overwhelmed, because I was just like, baby, like, I know you was writing and this fantasy world seems like so much fun, but if you flunk out, like...
Right. Oh, God. If you want to, like, show Seiji an achievement, maybe don't flunk out of school.
Don't flunk out of school. And then they pulled out her report card, and baby is failing hard in certain subjects. Hard as hell. I'm just like, damn, is that a 38? Like... Fuck.
Yikes.
How are you even gonna make that up? But what was sad about it is that even though I do feel like Shizuku could have been a little better off with a bit more discipline within her life of actually making sure that she was eating, because there were times when she was writing and she didn't even want to eat, y'all. And I feel like just having like more of that authority or presence would have helped her during that time of getting this story out. I also wish that her sister would have taken the same approach as their parents did and trying to understand why things were happening rather than just yelling at her about it.
Yeah, that's why I don't like her.
I understand her, but I wouldn't say like I don't dislike her, but I also don't fully like her either.
Yeah.
But within that, we are able to see that her parents are godsends. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. They're great.
But I love that they were so supportive of her. And then I think the last thing that I have is at the end of the movie in My Floats Your Boat.
Yeah, I have two super quick points before the end of the movie.
Okay.
So when Shizuku goes to the shop to give her manuscript to Grandpa Nishi, she walks downstairs and she looks at the workbench and she so easily envisions Seiji there, and they show him in the animation working on a violin and then the image of him working fades away. I loved that. I'm such a romantic person myself, and I'm also very sentimental, if you couldn't tell. And I felt like that resonated so much with me, because it's one of those, like, I have these feelings, I see you in everything, or the things that remind me of you vividly remind me of you. I really loved that. And also kind of from that same scene, just giving Studio Ghibli its obligatory pat on the back for how good that ramen looked that Shizuku and Grandpa Nishi were sharing. Oh my god, I was about to get up and make ramen.
Right? I was hungry.
Where's my bowl?
Right. For real, where's my bowl? Because she wrote her story, and as soon as she finished it, I was just like, wow, like, you really can't give him extra time? Like, you gotta read it right now. I'm glad that he was very accommodating, but it's just like, girl, he's old. Like,
yeah.
Damn. Like, so demanding, because that shit look thick as fuck. I was like,
Yeah, I mean, like, I would have just been grateful that someone said that they were going to read it and genuinely meant that they were going to read it. I'd be like, here you go. Just maybe, you know, whenever you have time, just let me know what you think. But she was like, read it. Read it right now.
Right now. A couple pages. And then if you think it's shit, just tell me. And it's like, you know he's not gonna think that, girl.
Right.
And so then she's just out on the balcony up until it's like dark, and I'm just like, girl, like, this thing inside of you that is making you doubt yourself, why is it so intense? Where is, like, I mean, yes, Seiji's making a violin, and you know what? I would sort of get it, because you can't compete with something like that. Like, he has been doing that shit for forever. I mean, given that he's only in middle school.
Yeah, it's also apples and oranges, right? You know? Like, they're both creative things in a sense, but one is literally working with your hands and creating an object, and the other is weaving words together to create a universe. They're creative, but they're entirely different things, and they both have entirely different experience levels. It's so unfair for her to be that hard on herself.
Yeah, I was just so concerned about her, you know. Then we see Moon. Hey, Moon.
Moon.
Snuggling right beside her. Just like, there you go.
Chunky baby.
Just so cute. And anyway, let me not keep gushing about this cat. So we see Moon, and then Grandpa Nishi opens it. He's like, oh, I finished it. And she's just like, tell me it's terrible. I know it's bad. And he's like, no, it's very good. Like, it's just like the rock. You just gotta polish it, and then it's fine.
I love him.
And she just breaks down. And you know what? Grandpa Nishi was real for that.
He was.
He was real for that because she's boohoo crying. It's like, I get it. And Moon is just like, child, it's cold. I'm going inside.
He's like, oh, this is too many emotions for me.
Right. And then he even drove her home, which thank you, Grandpa Nishi.
Right.
She stays out late as hell. I'm glad her mom commented on it because I'm just like, y'all are lax, but you can't be that lax.
Yeah.
Come on.
It was nice to see her like kind of pry a little.
Yeah. And then she just decides, well, I'm going to go back to studying now. So.
Yeah. Well, back to our regularly scheduled programming.
Yeah.
So we made it to the end where the first thing Seiji does is go to see Shizuku. And he gives her his coat because it's cold and it's early in the morning. And it's like a romantic morning bike ride in the chill of early winter. It's so sweet. They both are like, this isn't a dream. This is real life. And also in particular with this bike ride, I love how Shizuku insists on getting off the bike while he's struggling to go up that steep hill.
Yes, that was my last point. If I'm going with you, I'm going to help you.
Yeah, she's like, I'm no man's burden. I want to be of use. I love that line so much.
Oh my gosh, that whole thing. Because he goes to go get her. And he's talking about, he's like, we must be meant for each other. And I'm like, Jesus.
He takes her to his secret place to watch the sunrise. It's so sweet.
Yes, and then it was ice cream, you scream.
Yeah, we'll get there for sure. I do have one last point in Floats Your Boat, which is actually during the ending credits.
Okay.
So there is a little tiny scene during the ending credits where Sugimura and Yoko meet up and they start walking together. I was wondering if like maybe they managed to blossom a little romance off screen.
Yes, but she didn't even tell Yuko. She's like, girl. So he low-key like, let me not ruin the moment. I'm not gonna ruin it. I thought it was cute too when I was watching because I was just like, wait, is that really it? So I'm like watching the credits for real, y'all, till the end.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So getting into Banana Split, my very first thing, and forgive me. I know we already talked about Country Roads, but forgive me if you like this song. I don't dislike the song. It's just that with my job, I hear it several times every weekend. And I'm like super sick of it at this point. But it is kind of similarly to when we reviewed A Silent Voice and we heard My Generation. It was neat to hear this in a Japanese film, like with West Virginia and all.
I thought it was interesting too because, you know, guys, like this is our second film we're reviewing and both of the films we've reviewed have an English song.
Yeah, this was not planned.
Not planned at all. Did not expect it.
Yeah.
I feel like the thing about it is Country Roads is, I guess, a good song based off this movie because this is the first time like I ever really heard it for real. So hearing it was just kind of like, oh, okay, I like certain parts of the lyrics. But then we're talking about West Virginia. And then I was just like, this is Tokyo.
This is Japan. Yes.
This is Japan. Not Tokyo, but this is Japan. And then it's not as if we're like in like Hokkaido, which is like more of a country area, mm-hmm. like within Japan. And I get that basically the reason they're stuck on this song is because that Shizuku's talking about her path, right? And she's gonna take a road that's less traveled. I just did not expect for this song to be propelled throughout the entire film. I thought it's like, okay.
Me neither.
A one-off, and then we see it. So, like, yeah, like, I like it, but at the same time, I'm just like, this is a choice.
Yeah. Also, so funny about this, I knew, or rather, I couldn't remember whether or not I had watched Whisper of the Heart before, back when I was, like, in college and watching a lot of anime. And the second I turned this on and heard Country Roads, I was like, oh my god, there was a part of me that thought I fever dreamed Country Roads in an anime. And I guess I did watch this movie and didn't remember. So truly my only recollection from when I watched this before was that Country Roads was woven in the whole thing. But I just thought it was so funny. I'm like, I thought I kind of made that up.
I mean, hearing it, like, which actually actually, guys, if you follow us on social media at Shoujo Sunday, we have a shoujo anime filter on Instagram.
Yes.
When Gianna was practicing, like, using our filter out, she got Whisper of the Heart. So I put the music, because I had to put the demo video on our Instagram. And then it was Country Rose. The way I thought that shit was wrong, I'm like, okay, let me look this movie up. This is not the real opening, is it?
Yeah.
But it was. So that was my first interaction with Whisper of the Heart, because I actually saw The Cat Returns a long time ago.
I can't remember if I watched that one either.
I know that I watched it because I was in love with the Baron then too, but it was like during that Toonami age of, they were showing Kiki's Delivery Service. I think they also showed The Cat Returns. And then at that point, I think one of my sisters got me Spirited Away because it won the Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen The Cat Returns and barely remember that, but still, it was just like, I was very shocked that Country Roads was like the real opening.
Yeah.
Like back when I had to set up the demo video for our filter. Please use the filter.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's free. Tell us what you get. Tag us in your Instagram stories.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, very cute. Just a choice.
Yes, definitely a choice. Another banana split point that I have is that I would not be taking the train by myself at her age. I was barely allowed to roam the neighborhood with my friends at her age, let alone by myself.
Right, because I mean, people kill people. Like,
yes.
like when I was her age, I know she's in middle school, but still, like they were talking about, oh, look out for white vans and stuff. Like,
yeah.
People get taken. And I guess there's just, and maybe this is also, like I said, I think it's based in the 80s and maybe it was just a different time. But what made me pause is less about the train and just more about the fact that like her parents really let her almost flunk out before graduation.
Yeah, they're great. But there's also like a balance that needs to be struck.
Yeah, there needs to be a balance. And so like, when they had that heart to heart, and it's like, listen, in my soul, like low-key could have also been Rocky Road, because it's like, oh my gosh, I wish my parents had been so accepting of me like back then. I think before I got into this whole lawyer shit, I wanted to be a librarian. In any case, like if you're that close to graduation, I feel like even if your parents believe in you, they wouldn't let you flunk out like that. And I think it's good to be passionate about a dream, but the thing that I disliked, and it's like banana split, because obviously I like her romance with Seiji to the point that's ice cream, you scream from the end. But the fact that this boy came into her life and then she decided to just dedicate like weeks at a time to this goal to somehow match somebody that's not even in the same field as her and then put her schooling at risk.
Yeah.
It's really a lot. Like, I know that we're supposed to suspend our disbelief about the fact that Seiji can even carve violins and play them and do all of this stuff. But I feel like just the fact that I feel like that needed to be a conversation between her parents. Like, she sort of mentions him, although she corrects herself in saying that she wanted to do this. But when it didn't pan out, or not pan out, because she wrote the story, and then Grandpa Nishi said she had to polish it, then she's just like, well, I should go to high school. And it's like, okay, not that you can't go to high school, but you almost jeopardized you even getting into high school because you were writing this story.
Yeah.
And like, the thing is, they made it seem, and they both did it, Seiji and Shizuku, when Seiji is like, oh, I went over there and he liked my skill and everything and it was tough, but I'm gonna go to high school and then go figure this path out. And then she also is just like, okay, well, I went, spent this time with this book, now I'm gonna go to high school and then figure it out. And it's just like, why did y'all have to jeopardize your schooling to just do something that you're gonna do after high school? And it's like, you're like, what? So that was big banana split for me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like something I have in I mean, I put it in hot fudge, but it really could kind of go in any like hot fudge, ice cream, ice cream, or banana split. I feel like with the conflicts in this movie, that this story should have taken place at the end of high school and not the end of middle school.
Yeah,
it would have made a lot more sense for someone to be like, I need to spend 10 years in Italy to get this profession going if, like, they were at the end of their high school education, which is normally the time when someone is making a big decision like that. It just felt like I was suspending my disbelief too far.
Right. That's exactly it, Gianna. Exactly it.
Yeah.
For me. Because at middle school, it's like, middle school?
Yeah.
Why would your parents let you? They wouldn't let you. Like, you have to at least get the regular public education, and then you can figure out whatever it is what you want to do. I'll never understand somebody, like, jeopardizing that, because to stop at a middle school education, that is, like, not enough. And if anything, if you're even learning how, because it's like carpentry also, him creating this violin, but I'm certain that the people who do that have gone on to college or gone even past that, or like gone to art school, you know, like,
yeah,
it's not just, oh, this man taught me how to do it and then you do, like, no, like, you would need certificates. So yeah, I get you, like, the suspension of disbelief in certain parts, it was like kind of too much for me. It's like, no, this makes sense if they were in high school and then he's talking about, oh, I have to go to Italy and that I have to write whatever and stuff. But I don't know, it was a weird transition just to be like, this is my dream, this is my dream, this is my dream, I'm gonna go to high school.
Yeah. I just have one last banana split, and it's very silly. Okay. I just got to a point watching this where I was like, does everybody's name start with S in this movie? We have Shizuku, Shiho, Seiya, the dad, Seiji, Shiro, the grandfather, and Sugimura. I don't know if I'm missing anybody.
Yeah, I'll start calling them, like, Grandpa, Anishi, Dad. It's like, I ain't got time. There's too many S names.
Way too many.
Maybe, you know what? Maybe I just made up the name Masako because I didn't want her to be Shiho. I didn't want the sister to be, because it's all the S's. All
right, it got too confusing, too many S's.
Y'all don't gotta do all that.
But yeah, that's all of my banana split points. I don't know if you have any more.
I was banana split about Grandpa and Louise. I mean, that's also sort of Rocky Road at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
I thought Grandpa Nishi was going to die.
Oh.
When they were in, they panned to his room. This is right before Shizuku goes to give him the book. The door opens and it's Louise, and he's all apologizing. Oh, he got old, and that he's glad that he got to see her. And I'm just like, oh, is he going to die before she does the book? Like, I'm like, oh.
That's so sad.
Right.
Oh my God. I'm so glad that I didn't think that, because I probably would have been a wreck. Guys, I know that this is fictional and, like, we get really into it, but I think part of the fun of reviewing stuff is how into it that we get. I'm just like, just me even imagining him passing away while Seiji's in Italy, the one person who promised would read her manuscript,
right,
like, enthusiastically, and gave her a place to go and be herself unapologetically. I can't fathom that. That is too sad for me.
Right. I'm just thinking about Beats. I'm like, oh, okay. She's going over. He's holding her hand. It looks like I was like, oh, he's about to go to Jesus. Like, shit. Shit. So he's gonna have, I'm like, Seiji, she has to come back.
Oh my God. He's about to go to Jesus. I'm dead.
Like, it's just the way that it looks, guys. I'm just like, oh, girl. Because Louise looked like Louise. Like, she looked like back when he met her or whatever.
Yeah.
And everything. And he had talked about the war and shit. I'm like, oh, shit. But thankfully, that did not happen.
Oh, my God.
So many, like, lines of thought. So many misdirects, guys. I'm just like, how's this going to go? But yeah, I was banana split about it, because I'm just like, why did y'all do that?
It's like, what? Why do you have to play us like that?
Right. I'm like, I'm low-key fucked up. I'm like, oh, shit, man. I like Grandpa Nishi. He finna die. Like, why y'all don't take it from me?
Just preparing for the absolute worst-case scenario.
And then it didn't happen. And I was like, oh, thank God.
Oh, thank God. Oh, my God.
But yeah, banana split, because that scene, like, it was as beautiful as it was. I was really like, oh, my gosh, they finna kill this man. Like, why?
Oh my God, that's so funny and so sad at the same time.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No, that was it. At first, I almost thought what CG did at the end of the film was banana split, but no, that's my screaming scream for me, so.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way, because I wrote it in banana split at first, and I'm like, you know what? Maybe it's a little more than that.
Yeah.
But guys, with that little cliffhanger, I guess, not so much, on our thoughts about the end of the film, we are actually going going to banana split this into two parts. We thought we could get through it all, but the shoujo feels were so deep that we're gonna have to talk about this more next week. So be sure to tune in to part two of Whisper of the Heart next Shoujo Sunday. But until then, you can keep up with us on social media at Shoujo Sunday everywhere, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, all the like. Don't forget to also follow us on your preferred podcast platform and rate us 5 stars pretty please. It super helps get the word out there and show people that people like what we're saying and what we're talking about.
Yeah, especially on Apple Podcasts, guys. Let us know what you thought of our review of A Silent Voice or Kageki Shoujo.
Yeah.
Our Spotify is very cute, guys. Thank you for giving us our 5 stars on there. We have more 5 stars over there than we do on Apple Podcasts. And I know a lot of people tend to actually prefer Apple Podcasts, and we only have like 3 reviews on there. So if y'all could just leave a 5-star review, that would be nice. You can't do that. At least just rate us 5 stars.
Yeah, yeah. And also, if you're curious about us as individuals, my name is Gianna Luna, and you can follow me at Gianna_Luna_ across socials. That is Gianna with one N. And what about you, Chica?
You can follow me at Chica Supreme across all socials. That is Chica with a K, guys.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, we will be petting Moon again next week, and we will see you then.
See you on those country roads.
Bye.